Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. Each week, we provide our listeners information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and adult-use cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry experts, elected officials, local growers, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear the latest industry news and updates from the American Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis, personal success stories, and more. It's time to join the conversation. And here's your host, Dan Perkins.
This is Dan Perkins, your host and producer of America's Cannabis Conversation. All of us are going through great difficulty dealing with the ramifications of the Corona-19 virus. Many of the people we would like to talk to and we know that you would like to listen to are just not going to be available to us for a while. We know that many of the people we would like to talk to are now intensely focused on preserving and managing their businesses. Therefore, until further notice, we will originate new shows on the first and third Saturdays of the month. The second and fourth Saturdays will be a rebroadcast of the previous show. As soon as we as a nation get control of this virus and people can go back to work, we will go back to a full schedule. So I invite you to join us every Saturday and check out the website on a regular basis as we will be producing special content. We will post on the website when we're back to a full-time schedule. It is our hope that you and your families will be safe, and we look forward to the time when we can continue the conversation. This is Dan Perkins. This is Dan Perkins, and welcome to the America's Cannabis Conversation Quick News. Sacramento, California. Adult-use cannabis sales plunge after briefly hitting new highs on the coronavirus concern. Adult-use marijuana sales plunged only a few days after skyrocketing to new highs as customers prepared for the fallout from the coronavirus. Here's what happened. On March the 2nd, recreational marijuana sales in California, Colorado, and Washington State were all up over the same time period of 2019, from a modest 8% increase in Colorado to a whopping 88% in California. But by March 21st, sales had slowed in California to represent a 23% year-over-year increase, and in Colorado and Washington State, sales were down from the previous year. Boston, Massachusetts. More states say medical cannabis shops can open amid the COVID-19 virus crisis. Massachusetts, Michigan, and Ohio joined several other states in declaring that medical marijuana dispensaries can remain open in light of the stay-at-home orders designed to help combat the coronavirus outbreak. In Massachusetts, medical marijuana dispensaries in the state will allow to stay open from Tuesday through noon Eastern Time, April 7th. Recreational cannabis shops must close their doors during this time frame. Moving on to Michigan, both medical marijuana and adult-use cannabis retailers can remain open with caveats. Marijuana sales can only occur through curbside and delivery services. And finally, in Ohio, while ordering non-essential businesses to close until 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, April 6, Ohio's health director stipulated that licensed medical marijuana dispensaries and licensed medical marijuana cultivation centers could keep their doors open. And that's your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's joining the conversation today. First, we have Mike Doran, CEO and Managing Partner of Evolution Risk, who is our partner in the banking deal, whose firm provides many of the business services that you need to run a successful, real business. Next, we have Scott Goldie, who is the President and CEO of Goldseed, which is a grower of cannabis products in California. He tells us how his greenhouse endeavor, the difficulty in starting the greenhouses, and what's very important to Scott, having somebody who's grown the product before. Our next guest is Chris Walsh, who is the president and CEO of Marijuana Business Daily, and his publication is considered by many as the New York Times of the cannabis industry. And finally, and very important, is a conversation with our American Cannabis Conversation Dr. On Call, Dr. Jordan Tischler, who deals with the problem of anxiety and depression brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. great and stirring interview. Can't miss it. This is Dan Perkins, so let's get started with the conversation. Welcome back to America's Cannabis Conversation. And we're continuing a very, very important interview with Michael Dorrance, who's the CEO and managing partner of Evolution Risk LLC, which is one of our partners in the Cannabis Electronic Checking Account. Yes, you heard that right. Cannabis Electronic Checking Account, available nationally. So, Michael, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate being here.
So we want to talk now. You've been in the business for a little over a year, and you've got approaching $1 billion in deposits. What's been the challenges? You told us in our last interview that one of the challenges is believability. How is it possible that you can do this and nobody else has? So how do you deal with that question of believability?
Well, you know, one of the stumbling blocks we have, you know, the reason why, let's just say we're not blowing up, that we're not getting over inundated with requests for this banking opportunity, because there is a process, you know, a venting process to get the banking approved and everything else, because we're still dealing with the federal government in many different ways. And the reason why we're just not getting over it is because they just don't believe it. And the biggest objection, or I would say the challenge that we face as a company in this industry, is credibility, and these cannabis companies and businessmen are in desperate need of proper, legitimate banking opportunities that us as normal other business entities have access to. So the biggest challenge we face in helping these accounts out and these clients out is credibility and letting them believe in what we're doing. Now, the nice thing that we do offer, I mean, let's just say we're more of a marketing or distribution arm of this entity. We get every client that we sign up, before we sign anything up, we allow them to speak directly to the bank in an interview, in a process, a phone call, so they can get more information, get more knowledge, and talk and speak directly to the source. So we try to we bridge that gap of lack of potential communication. So that's what we do right at the initial stage, before we ask anything from them, other than, of course, an NDA. Then once that process starts, then the application process starts. We have a huge success rate once we can get the potential client on the phone call with the actual bank. Then we have much more success.
I'm amazed at the stories that I've talked to people about where they put cash. And I have an acquaintance who owns a number of dispensaries in Northern California. And we think in terms of cash being vulnerable, and the government says it's behind liquor stores is most frequently broken into or held up. But what happens is that he's spending an enormous amount of money. And he's told me, you know, almost 6 figures a year in security to patrol not only the dispensaries, Mike, but the growing fields. So having the ability to protect the cash, and let's talk a little bit about how a relationship, once it gets started, how does the cash get into their checking account?
You mentioned something in the security thing, which, you know, over the last year and a half, I've gotten an incredible education on the issues, serious issues that face these cannabis owners and the amount of money they spend on security. So some of our clients are distributors. We have growers. We have some that are fully integrated, meaning we have growers, distributors, and dispensaries. Mm-hmm. So they're a big process, and they literally for delivery of product. And then remember, they're on a cash basis. They mm-hmm. walk around a little safe on a hand truck. They go in, take cash, drop it directly into that little hand truck, and they put that into the back of the van with the products, and they have an armed guard with them. So everywhere they're going across their region, whatever their sales district is, they've got their vans going out there with the driver and an armed guard, which means they have to pay for that too.
Well, one of the things I do want to add to what you just said is that it's not just a van. It has to be outfitted with a lot of security protection when they put that money back into the van. So it's not just buying a Sprinter or a Ford van.
There's an incredible amount of money expense going. They're basically little mini armored cars, is what they are. They're just and they're expensive.
And you've got a driver who has to drive the car, and then you have the person who's collecting the money. So you got to pay two salaries plus the equipment.
Just a delivery. And because the cash pickup, and that's where this gets eliminated, that whole issue with the cash. Changing hands, meaning you could go direct deposit. Now, to get back to your question, what's the process? We use an armored vehicle that we contract with, a regional armored truck company, and they come pick up the cash, the physical cash themselves, they inventory it and everything else, and they bring it to a FDIC-insured bank, and then the funds have to go through a venting process, which is a whole other issue, and the reason why we're having problems with the cash issues to begin with, are the banking issues, and then the funds are then transferred or wired into the bank, into this company's operating account.
Mm-hmm. And out of that operating account, and this, I can see where what I'm about to say seems like unbelievable to a lot of people in the business, but in that operating account, it's an electronic checking account. They can electronically put money in people's accounts for payroll. They can pay their taxes to the state and federal government. They can buy products or services for their company and pay for them. We have the opportunity with this product to dramatically reduce the cash that's in circulation, where the dispensary owner, and in some cases, the owner, the employees, and the customers are at risk of being accosted in the dispensary and being robbed.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're creating a much safer and secure environment, not only for the cash, but for the employees and for the owners and the customers. That's the thing, one of the things that amazes me. So let's take, in the few minutes we have left, what is it that the people who are buying our services, what do they say after they get into the process and they start seeing what happens? What are they saying about the cannabis checking account program?
Well, they're a little bit in shock. They first, obviously, are very grateful. We follow up, obviously. We're a marketing arm, so our job, of course, is to maintain a relationship and communication with all the accounts, and we do follow up. It's very important to us that the promises and guarantees that we make, we follow up on them. So we do follow up on them. Sometimes there's a little bit of learning curve where the account doesn't get upset, but there's some education process how it works, especially with electronic checks and those kind of things. So once that's all, we get over that hump, and then things are in full flow. They operate as a normal business. Now, many, if not all, these cannabis owners have been in business before, been an employee with the company before, or been in management with another company before, and also everybody with their own personal checking accounts and personal savings account, they know what a bank and how easy it is to process money for all your needs, paying bills or whatever the case may be. They've never experienced that in the cannabis space. So now they experience it for the first time. They're familiar with the process because it's something we take for granted in our day-to-day life on a personal and professional level. Now they are experiencing that exact same thing in the cannabis business, and it's shocking, but at the same time, it's familiar with them because that's the way they feel it should be. So that's been what the feedback we're getting is that now we feel like we're a legitimate business. We're doing things. We know we're a legitimate business. We know it. We're a legal business. But now we feel like we're operating as a real business. And from an employer to employee perspective, the employees now have a more comfort feeling also that this is a legitimate business, a legitimate company, which they are.
Right.
It's only going to get bigger, by the way, and get more popular and more. I mean, it's the way it's going, and it is going to get more mainstream, and it is going to. The laws are going to continue to lessen and open up and more, Of course, the biggest, from the federal government standpoint, the biggest concern, which I'm sure you pointed out before, is the laundering of money and illegal money. So that's the only issue. And the same thing, it started with, when we had prohibition. The same thing with alcohol. The same process right now we're going through marijuana. The steps are exactly the same, or at least very, very similar. And it's just going to take time until the federal government understands. There's still going to be a venting process as far as federal government's concerned with the acceptance and moving of cash. But other than, and that's going to lessen up over time, but it's still a process. So it's not like a regular bank that you and I are familiar with, where we just put our money into a bank and we walk away. You know, it has to go through this process. But other than that, and that process will lessen over time. But you know, they're extremely pleased and grateful for this opportunity, and it's taken a huge amount of pressure and time and expense away from them. It's been going great. We're very, very pleased.
Right. Unfortunately, Michael, we're out of time.
I do talk a lot.
No. It's important to give you as much airtime as possible to tell your story. We're just the conduit. So we've been talking to Michael Dorrance, who is the CEO and managing partner of Evolution Risk and one of our partners in America's Cannabis Conversations' new electronic cannabis checking account. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Dan. As always, thank you.
So if you missed this great interview with Michael, or part of it, go back to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and you can hear the rest of this and other interviews by Mike, and learn more about what he and our partners are doing to bring banking to the industry. We'll be right back.
Your new cannabis electronic checking account can offer you PIN secure credit and debit cards for your clients. We can place a cashless ATM at your checkout counter, which reduces the amount of cash on hand. Did you know that we can help you bring legacy cash into your new cannabis electronic checking account? No more paying with cash. Making payments with your electronic check is safe and secure. So if you find yourself up at night worrying about somebody breaking in and stealing your cash, consider a cannabis electronic checking account. To find out if a cannabis electronic checking account is right for you, call 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8844. You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Dan Perkins, and joining us today is somebody that I've wanted to have on the show for a long time. It's a gentleman by the name of Scott Goldie, and he has a company called Golden Seed, which is a grower of cannabis products, and I've never had one on. I know a lot of you, my listeners, are interested in the possibility of setting up a growing operation. So hopefully Scott can give us some help. Scott, thank you for joining us in the conversation today.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Tell me, how did you get involved in the business?
So my background has been predominantly in real estate development. And about 5 years ago, we bought our first operating company, which was the Napa Valley Wine Train. And we did that because it had a lot of extra real estate. And so when the laws passed to make cannabis legal in California, we were looking for an opportunity in that space. And we came upon a property in Santa Cruz County, about 100 acres of existing plants that we sell these miniature Christmas tree plants, for instance, at Trader Joe's. That property, that company had a 20-acre parcel that was zoned for cannabis and met all the requirements. So by taking the cash flow from the existing business, we're able to fund the development of our cultivation. The growing process takes a lot of regulatory hurdles. We've gotten through all those hurdles, and we've now started about a 40,000-square-foot grow with the capability to grow that to about a 440,000-square-foot grow. So that's what we'll
do. Now, is that all outside?
No, it's all greenhouse.
all greenhouse. And why did you choose to go greenhouse versus just au naturel?
Well, in every county, every jurisdiction has a different law. In Santa Cruz County, you can't grow outdoors. So it has to be either an indoor grow or a greenhouse grow.
It's got to be really tough as a person, an entrepreneur who wants to get in this business. And you cross one county line and you got a whole different set of rules and another county line. Must be frustrating.
Yeah, the way California set that up by delegating the actual regulations to the jurisdictions, I think it was a little backwards. I mean, literally, I was in three counties at one time. Almost everything completely different and most of the key variables for your business. So we're predominantly in Santa Cruz County now. We're focused on the grow that we have, and we're really excited about it. I think for a guy like me coming into the industry a few years ago, it's absolutely critical you partner with someone that has all the technical skills of the plant. And we're fortunate to have as a partner a gentleman that's been growing for almost 40 years. And he came out of Humboldt County, which is kind of the gospel, you know, for growing cannabis. So it's been a great partnership.
So I don't ask to embarrass you. I'm just curious. Were you a consumer of the product before you started growing it commercially?
No, and I'm still not.
Still not a user. Why not?
No. I know there's edibles and stuff, but I just don't like smoking. I don't like the physical aspect of it.
Okay. All right. Yeah, the edibles are there, and there's tinctures. So tell me about Gold Seed.
So Golden Seed, we're a vertically integrated cannabis company and also now hemp. But on the cannabis side, which is our main focus.
Just so our people understand, what do you mean when you say vertically integrated?
So we start all the way with creating our own soil. We have a worm farm, and then we're a breeder, so we have seeds. We're a nursery, so we have clones, which is the small plant you use to create the mothers, and, you know, all the way to cultivating. And then we have retail products. We have a pre-rolled joint that has terpene-infused tip, and we also sell flower, and we'll be unveiling some more products. So we go all the way from basically the seed to the stores.
But you don't own it. Do you own any stores?
No, we're not. We are not in the dispensary business yet.
You think you'll get there?
We're evaluating it. You know, there's a lot of different business models. Delivery, particularly with this virus, is, you know, going off the charts, and I think people will like that and probably continue it.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Do you need a dispensary in order to be a delivery service?
No, if you have a distribution license in California, you can deliver to anyone in the state.
And is it coming out of your inventory, or are you delivering on behalf of a dispensary?
Well, right now we currently don't deliver because we're growing our cultivation. But we do have a distribution license. So that probably will be a future thing that we're going to be doing.
So under the distribution license, would you be distributing for a regular licensed dispensary, or would you be distributing out of your own warehouse or whatever and delivering to consumers?
Yeah, it'd be the latter, and we could take on other companies. I was with a company here in Santa Cruz today that we're discussing exactly that.
The opportunity is in branding product, not vertically integrated, but to let somebody else be the dispensary, build a product line, create a brand, market the brand, and sell it to the dispensaries, and much like a supermarket. You're getting so much shelf space and you put your product in. What do you think about that model?
I think he's right. I think, you know, and what I've learned over the last couple of years and talking with a lot of people in the capital markets, I think you create the biggest enterprise value by creating a very strong lifestyle brand. And a lot of those companies are buying, you know, they're really creating predominantly the brand. Someone else is growing the flower.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else is packaging it. And they're just really creating a strong brand. And I do think that's how you create a lot of value in this space.
You say you're vertically integrated, so you grow it, process it, package it, and sell it to a dispensary to distribute to consumers. Is the Gold Seed, is that your brand, or do you have sub-brands in your product line?
Well, Golden Seed is our primary brand now. We are talking to some people that would create a sub-label underneath us. We're also looking at a collaboration with another Santa Cruz-based cannabis company. But, yeah, we expect to grow our brand. You know, I've seen people that have kind of multiple tiers with different brands. We're Golden Seed, we believe, is a premium brand. That's why it's important for us to control the growing of the flower. We're a completely sustainable grower. We don't have any conventional pesticides or chemicals or fertilizers. It's all Mother Nature.
Would it be fair to say organic, or is that too much of a stretch?
Well, no, it really is, but that's a federally regulated term, so we don't use it, but that is how we grow.
So when you look at you're in California and you're talking about Washington and Nevada, you can't really transport the product over state lines. So how do you create an alliance with somebody in Washington or Nevada?
Well, you can. If you have seeds and certain genetics, you can go across state lines.
So you can't take the finished product across the state line, but you could take the genetics and the seeds.
Yes.
Yeah, this gentleman up in Sacramento was telling me that he believes there are over 2,000 brands in the cannabis retail market at the moment, and there is nobody, and he said it twice, nobody that has any dominant position in the marketplace.
I tend to agree with that. There's some people that are breaking out a little bit, I think. Caliba is a big one. But I agree, it's very much a diffused market with a lot of brands, you know, really trying to establish and grow. And the regulatory environment hasn't helped it out because there's been a lot of stops and starts with a lot of the companies.
Right. Now, you said you were also growing hemp?
Yeah, we are growing hemp, but only for finished products. So we're in a collaboration right now with a group that's going to they're going to manufacture hemp cigarettes, which is kind of an emerging market. And our genetics in hemp are really, I think, at the forefront of that smokable hemp. It's very high terpene profiles, the flavor and the aroma of the plant. And that's what's really important in a hemp cigarette.
Would you try it?
I've tried a hemp cigarette, yeah.
And what do you think?
It's very calming. I think the CBD, it's like a calming, like, you know, kind of brings your anxiety levels down. And
okay. Yeah, it does.
Some of them really do have good flavor.
Now, you're doing something in the few minutes we have left. You're doing something that's not unprecedented, but unprecedented in the cannabis industry. And you're selling an opportunity online to invest in your company for as little as $100. Tell our listeners how that works.
Well, so we were qualified, the first cannabis company qualified by the SEC to do this type of fundraising. It's only been around for about 3 years. It was part of the Jobs Act that came out of the last downturn.
Mm-hmm.
We have a really good securities counsel that's done a number of these Regulation A offerings, and we reached out to him, and he said, yeah, I think it's possible. So I think the fact we're first has a lot to do with the fact that most people thought you couldn't do it, you know, being a cannabis company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not inexpensive and it's not quick, but we worked our way through that process, got qualified, and then we launched on January 6th, and it's been very successful. I think to go back to your earlier point about creating brand, this to us is not only a way to raise capital, but it's really a way to establish a broad footprint for our brand.
Right.
I mean, today we have investment applications from 50 states and 49 states, and we're in 20 countries. And we have about 1,500 people that have applied. So the difference between application and investment is it takes a clearing process to convert. So it takes about 2 to 3 weeks from someone making the commitment to the funds being dispersed and they become an official investor.
So is this something that you would, and the purpose of this was to raise capital to do what?
Well, we're going to invest in our infrastructure, keep building out our greenhouses.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some money for marketing to help, you know, build the brand. And then we'll pay down some debt. But if you think about it, I mean, it's really threefold. You're raising capital, and, you know, our offering's for $10 million. It could be open as long as a year, and I think we'll raise a significant amount of capital. But you're also creating brand ambassadors that are out there promoting Golden Seed. They have ownership in that company, and they're really pushing it through their social media channels. And they're going to be asking dispensaries to carry their product. And then, you know, if you think about it, we'll be one of the first cannabis companies in the country to have a national footprint. Granted, it won't be as big in other states, but we're already in every state, you know, creating some brand awareness. So we think those three things make this a, you know, ideal vehicle
wow.
for cannabis.
Scott, how do people get information about your offering and about your company?
So for the offering, it's owngoldenseed.com. You just go on there. It's a very easy, straightforward process. And our company's website is gseed.com.
gseed.com. And the offering is?
Owngoldenseed.com.
Owngoldenseed.com. We've been talking with an entrepreneur who's a forward thinker and a creative guy, Scott Goldie of Golden Seed. And thank you for joining us on the conversation today, sir.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can listen to this interview and others on the archive section of W420RadioNetwork.com. This is Dan Perkins, and we'll be right back.
Introducing the new Cannabis Electronic Checking Account. Did you know that in 2019, almost one in five dispensaries were either robbed or broken into? Your business is cash only, because up to now, you didn't have access to a banking account that would allow you to deposit the daily receipts from your business. Some owners have started a banking relationship only to be told in a few months that the institution was closing the account. For the first time, you can now have a reliable business checking account. Yes, I said a secure bank electronic checking account. For more information, call 1-888-420-8844 and ask for Dan Perkins. That's 888-420-8884 and ask for Dan Perkins.
Welcome back to the conversation. And joining me today is probably, in my opinion, one of the most influential people in the cannabis industry in the United States today, and maybe even globally, Chris Walsh, who is the CEO and president of Marijuana Business Daily. And it's more than just Marijuana Business Daily, but we're here to talk to him as somebody who's been involved in the business. So, Chris, thank you for joining us today on America's Cannabis Conversation.
Thank you very much, and I'm flattered by the introduction. I appreciate it.
When I talked to your people about having you on the show, one of the questions I said I wanted to ask was, given that the price of equities were down 60% last year, and based on indexes, probably down another 40% from that level so far this year, what kind of damage do you think is being done to the industry, and what do you think the challenges in the industry are going to be going forward?
Yeah, I mean, those are great questions that I think all of us are trying to sort through right now. The industry, in some respects, was on a bit precarious footing before the recent events of the last couple of weeks, with challenges in California, challenges in Canada, and you know, an industry that's trying to mature in general. So there were some issues already kind of roiling parts of the industry, although there's been great growth as well. We are in a new era right now, and it's very hard to tell how this is all going to end up and what it's going to mean for the cannabis industry. You know, you have capital markets across the globe shutting down or tightening significantly, and you have a lot of unknowns about, again, how this is all going to play out. So, you know, we're really trying to keep track on what this is going to mean in the near term for cannabis businesses with the coronavirus and the issues that were already playing out in the industry and what it's going to mean for the long term. And unfortunately, right now, there's not a lot of answers, although there are plenty of bright spots and optimism for the future of the industry in the long run.
So what do you think about delivery as a major evolution of the industry?
Yeah, I mean, before I answer that, just to backtrack to your points, you know, I absolutely agree that in the past it was you know, you can kind of open up a storefront and be successful. That has changed and has been changing for years. In times like this, though, you know, innovation is extremely important. As a business owner, you have to be looking at what is this going to mean going forward and where can I pivot my business to capture the changing needs of the audience that may be short term or they may be permanent. There may be some long term impacts of consumer and social behavior resulting from this. So, you know, the idea is to look at where the puck is going while you're looking at where it's at now. And although that's uncertain, there are plenty of new opportunities that are out there right now for companies across the board. So, you know, you always got to look for the silver lining and where the cannabis industry will survive and it will get into a position of thriving again and in another wave of growth. And how do you position for that knowing what we know now? So to your point, you know, delivery or kind of quote unquote curbside pickup of cannabis is in high demand. And is what you're seeing is some cities and states are, you know, putting medical cannabis dispensaries in a class with other vital businesses that should remain open. So there's that silver lining right now. And yes, delivery is huge. The increase in demand for cannabis right now is massive in certain areas. And so whether that's delivery or the stores are still open and practicing, you know, 6 feet between customers or, you know, sanitation measures, the sales side of the industry to the consumer is really bright right now in many cases. We'll see how long that lasts and whether it does last. But, you know, it might be people just kind of hoarding up on cannabis as they're doing with toilet paper and paper towels. But in times like these, this is the first time this industry is going through something like this. Obviously, none of us have ever been in this situation. But so is what we have to see how it plays out is, you know, does the demand stay solid or does it increase like it has been proven to do in other areas like alcohol or even tobacco in times of turmoil? You know, people turn to other things. So on the recreational side, again, we'll see where demand goes. But so far, that's a promising silver lining in this is that demand is strong.
What is your crystal ball telling you that you're seeing that gives you hope that there's going to be recovery and a significant change? What are you seeing?
My crystal ball is shattered right now. I just think it's so hard to predict what is going to happen overall with this. But what gives me hope is you know, the world will return from and persevere through this. And, you know, cannabis had a lot of momentum going into this, and nothing about this will likely change that. And so the industry still has a bright future ahead. The demand, again, we're seeing now in times like this is off the charts in some respects. So it doesn't change my view of the long-term health of this industry and the possibilities as legalization spreads. And there will be new opportunities that result from this as well, as we've just discussed.
Do you think that panic that we have, as you mentioned earlier, people possibly buying supply, being afraid that it won't be around, like people buying toilet paper and paper towels, do you think that that the industry is big enough, strong enough, that it will get any real attention from the federal government as they try and fight this particular virus, or is it a lower tier?
Yeah, probably not, unless somehow CBD or cannabis in general is part of the cure, or is, you know, can help prevent this in any way, which, you know, I doubt is going to be the case. But I would say in general, you know, no, it's probably lower on the federal government's list, unless, again, we need to revive this economy and the industry and key lawmakers who support it can make the argument that, hey, we've got to get this economic engine revving again, and this is one of several ways we can do it. That is when it might catch the attention of the federal government more so than it has to date.
How important, Morgan said that he was hoping that there would be some perhaps legislation that would waive 280E. You think that's possible?
You know, we've been doing this for 9 years, and every year we're hoping and hoping we're going to see some federal change. So, you know, I'm a little bit beaten up by dealing with this year in, year out, and having your hopes, you know, rise, and it looks like something is gaining traction, and then, you know, it doesn't go anywhere. So, you know, I'd never say never, but you know, it still seems like this might, you know, economic considerations aside, it might take a little bit. But it really depends on the presidential election, though, and who we have in leading the nation next year, and that could introduce new changes as well.
So you would think that, are you suggesting that perhaps if we got a Democrat, there would be more movement as opposed to a re-election of Donald Trump?
There could be. With Trump, you never know. You never know when his position will shift. He has largely done nothing, you know, for this industry, although on the bright side, he hasn't really attempted to crack down on it either, which were big considerations when he became president. If you did have, you know, it depends on the Democrat. You know, Bernie Sanders wants to legalize it nationwide. Joe Biden is much more cautious and had to walk back some, you know, more or less anti-marijuana comments recently. But I think he is more receptive than we've seen from Trump into addressing this issue. Now, it might not happen right away, but it might set the gears in motion. So it really depends on how the balance of power falls, not only with the president, but in Congress. You know, you would have thought the government would have done something by now when you've got the vast majority of the nation legalizing medical and an increasing number of states legalizing recreational and dozens of state or countries across the world legalizing medical to federal level. It seems like a no-brainer to most people, but, you know, it's puzzling why there hasn't been any action so far. So it's hard to predict when there will be.
Recently, the Denver Post reported about an uptick in break-ins and robberies in dispensaries in Denver. In fact, the highest level in 3 years. Given what's going on with people out of work and dispensaries being open, do you have any concerns about further risk to the operators and owners of these dispensaries across the country?
It should be something at the forefront of everyone's mind, not just in cannabis, but in general. You know, we're hoping this doesn't result in a chaotic situation with kind of pandemonium ensuing and kind of a, you know, putting yourself first and, you know, running into places and stockpiling supplies and running out the door, you know, or robberies. You know, I don't know where that would all go. I'd say the risks to the cannabis sector are likely the same as to anyone who's staying open in this environment or in the ballpark. It is concerning to see what's happening in Denver. I mean, for you know, the first years of this industry, it was amazing actually how low the crime rate at dispensaries was. I don't know what's been fueling that change, but it's something that should be on the radar of the industry for sure, because that we don't want that, you know, to escalate.
I suggest that one of the answers to your question of what's causing it is the growth rate in the business of being an all cash business and a doubling of the gross revenue coming in the front door puts an enormous amount of pressures on the owners of the dispensaries. What do you do with the cash? And it's there, and it's becoming more and more tempting as the size of the industry grows on a cash basis.
Sure. And this is another complete failing of the federal government to have billions and billions of dollars floating around unbanked in cash. I mean, it's ludicrous. We're going to look back and we already feel that it's ludicrous, but you know, history is not going to be kind to the lawmakers who continue to oppose this, whether they like it or not, in this environment. It's creating unsafe situations for people. It's creating business hurdles when they don't need to be there. And the majority of the population wants this legalized, and many prominent people through all walks of life use it for medical or recreational purposes. It's just, it's a ridiculous circus at how the federal government has approached this. And, you know, I think it will change. It's just, when is that?
When is it going to happen? Ladies and gentlemen, we've been honored to have Chris Walsh with us today, who is the president and CEO of Marijuana Business Daily Publications and many other facets of the business. And Chris, thank you for joining us. After we sign off, I just need to ask you one more question, but how can people get in touch with you and follow what you're doing, Chris?
The best way is to check out mjbizdaily.com. That's our main news portal. We also have hempindustrydaily.com. So we cover the hemp industry, we cover the investing side, and we have events, which, you know, we're working through our strategy right now. But so the main portal is mjbizdaily.com, and from there you can navigate through all we offer.
I tell you, it is a great website. Thank you for joining us today on America's Cannabis Conversation.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on the W420 Radio Network. America's newest and fastest growing cannabis-focused radio network is expanding across the country and looking to add to our sales and marketing team. America's Cannabis Conversation offers listeners insight and information on the exploding world of cannabis. It also gives advertisers the opportunity to reach a hyper-targeted audience, literally neighborhood by neighborhood, in markets all across the country. We're looking for a few motivated individuals that want to essentially run their own local business in markets like Boston, Las Vegas, Reno, Orlando, and more. To learn more about this exciting opportunity or to apply, visit americascannabisconversation.com.
Welcome to the conversation. And today we have our old friend, Dr. Jordan Tischler. And we've talked with Dr. about what we think is an important subject that needs to be discussed. And that is this incredible virus that we're fighting as a nation and a world. The level of anxiety and depression and fear is rising dramatically all over the country. And we know that this is an area where Dr. Tischler excels. So we thought we'd invite him on and talk to him about how cannabis may help people who are dealing with anxiety and depression. So, Doctor, welcome to the conversation.
Well, thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Let's talk about anxiety and depression and how cannabis might be able to help.
Well, you know, it's an enormous subject, and it's sort of impressive and overwhelming the degree to which we Americans suffer with anxiety in particular, even before good old COVID-19 showed up on the scene. And, you know, if I look at my practice across all age ranges, anxiety features prominently amongst the illnesses that people have, regardless of, you know, what is actually bringing them to me. Meaning, if they're coming in for back pain, there's always then the back pain engenders a certain amount of anxiety, and you know, insomnia, poor sleep leads to anxiety. And so you get in these sort of snowballs, and you realize, particularly when you're practicing cannabis medicine, that that all these things are related to each other and they feed off each other. And the key to helping somebody with these processes is really to help by breaking the cycle. And so if you can get somebody whose, you know, back pain gets better, then their anxiety goes down, they sleep better, and then the whole thing just starts getting better. And now obviously we have this, really insane virus that's running rampant through the world, as you pointed out. And the necessary steps to contain the virus, all of the social distancing stuff, is really interrupted pretty much everything. I went this morning out for a walk, and I had been previously able to get a cup of coffee on the walk, and I found that all of the coffee shops are closed, which is probably appropriate, even though it surprised me. And, you know, it was great to get out for a walk. And I really recommend to all of our listeners that getting a little exercise doesn't have to be vigorous, just a little nice stroll, but also getting out into nature, which doesn't necessarily mean a forest. It could be just your local park. All of these things have actually been shown in decent science studies to improve anxiety and decrease stress. So, you know, without even getting into the cannabis discussion, there's something that they can do even under these circumstances.
A lot of stories, and I'm not sure I'm qualified to tell whether they're true or not true, but that I read this article that you have to be careful when you're out walking because you may not necessarily know who walked before you. Now I'm hearing, it used to be minutes, hours. Now I'm hearing people talking about the virus can survive for days, just sitting there on a surface.
Well, so here's what we know. It depends on what the surface is made of. So what we know is that it seems to be able to survive on cardboard and paper surfaces for about 24 hours. On a stainless steel tabletop, it seems to be able to survive for about three days. So if you're out taking a walk and somebody has sneezed on the ground, I suspect that that's not a particularly viable environment for this virus. And the only real way that you're going to get this, you know, is that if you're licking the ground, which I think is unlikely, or potentially if you were to walk through it. And then handle your shoes and then rub your eyes or put your fingers in your mouth. Conceivably, that could happen. But we know that everybody listening is smart enough to take their shoes off at the door and to wash their hands immediately after they get into the house, and possibly have used some hand sanitizer along the way. And so I think that those are the reasonable things that we need to be doing, and that should be enough to diminish the risk. And so I would say take the walk. I think that that's a hugely important part of self-care and well-being.
So where do we start to begin to get a hold of this anxiety? And then some people can be on the verge of paranoia. How do we help people, Doctor?
Issue with cannabis and anxiety is that there's just an astounding array of misinformation out there. And so one of the things that we know when we look at the mental health studies around cannabis is that they're very mixed. And by mixed, I mean some of the studies show that cannabis can help anxiety, and other studies show that it can actually be harmful for anxiety. And so you really kind of have to get out the pick and shovel and dig down into these studies to try and tease apart why, you know, they say they're saying opposite things. And it is complicated, unfortunately, by the current legal system, because these research studies often cannot give the test subject the cannabis. They have to sort of just have the subject kind of go use something and then come back and talk about it. And when you don't know what the dose is, that can be a problem in terms of figuring out. Because when we look at the studies that do look at the dose, what we see is that very small doses can be helpful, but higher doses can be harmful. And so if you're not measuring the dose, it's all going to look like it's all over the map. So when I talk about small doses, this is what I'm talking about. Something in the range of 5 to 10 milligrams of the THC component, which may, in fact, by inhalation, meaning flower vaporization, be sort of 1 to 2 puffs. And by puff, I mean a really deep, full inspiration is a 5-milligram puff, assuming that you're putting cannabis into the machine that is between 15 and 20% THC. Now, I know I just threw a lot of numbers at you, but the key is low dose, 1 to 2 puffs, you know, a 5-milligram gummy or maybe a 2 5-milligram gummies, but not more than that. And typically, I would dose that in the evening, meaning around or just before bedtime. And the reason for that is because, you know, cannabis does come with some modicum of intoxication. Now, at these low doses, we're not talking about anything that's too overwhelming, but it's some. And it turns out that, as best we can tell, it's not the intoxication that's helping with the anxiety. It's some other aspect of the cannabis that's doing it. And so you get the intoxication, but it isn't really the curative aspect. And so if we dose this then around bedtime, then people kind of, you know, wind down and feel good and sleep off the rest of that intoxication. And the next day when they wake up, they feel refreshed. That intoxication has gone away, but the anxiety control, that benefit, persists throughout the day. And we know that when we use cannabis for anxiety during the day, things like our productivity in schoolwork and work tend to drop off. And so that's another area where cannabis can be counterproductive. If you ask at the dispensary or from your stoner buddies, what they're going to suggest is that when you wake up in the morning, before your feet hit the floor, you light up a big bowl, and basically anytime you feel any twinge of anxiety, you smoke more. And quite frankly, that's exactly the scenario where we know that that will come back to bite you on the tush if you do that for any length of time.
So you're recommending that this dosage level is something you do at night, not during the day or the morning. And
exactly.
Trying to get the, in essence, from my veterans days with my foundation, dealing with sleep deprivation, try and increase the quality of REM level and deep sleep so that the body relaxes and recharges itself, which is something it can do. It's hard to do if you're suffering significant anxiety.
Had in Massachusetts, we have suspended recreational under the current circumstances.
If I walk into a recreational store, does the package, I'm kind of asking about packaging, does the package show the amount of THC per dose and what the dose should be?
Well, that's a great question. So yes, all of the states require the packaging to have the appropriate information on it. However, it can require a PhD to read the label. So that the information is there. It's just not readily accessible. And then the other thing is, you asked it, does it tell what the dose should be? No, it says what the serving size is, and that's some non-physician's idea of what one piece of this cannabis material ought to have in it. And that can be all over the map. Some states regulate that very tightly and others less so, and some regulate it tightly in the recreational market but less so in the medical market. Generally speaking, most places have decided that one piece of an edible ought to be either 5 milligrams or 10 milligrams. And I'm reasonably good with that idea. There are people who complain about that, but then they tend to be the ones who are less medically oriented, even if they see themselves as medical. The argument always goes, patients need more. And I'm saying, actually, patients need less. Patients need very specific low doses to get the benefit. And it's the people who want to be, getting really intoxicated who tend to need more and more and more as they use more and more, right? If you're looking at a gummy and it's got 5 milligrams in it, that's a really good product place to start. If it's got 10 milligrams in it, then it really becomes a question of, is it large enough that you can reasonably cut it in half? Sometimes they're so small that, you really can't cut them. I would tend to avoid products that are more than 10 milligrams because at some point you really can't cut them into many, many pieces and have any accuracy at all. And then the results are going to be all over the map. But that's, the products, this is the way I look at it. Across the country, the cannabis provision system is really quite broken from a medical point of view. So my job is really to help my patients navigate this broken system to find the correct thing for them that's going to do what it needs to do, and we can leave all the other stuff for the recreational users.
Thank you. It's been very enlightening for me, and I'm sure for our audience. We've been speaking with Dr. Jordan Tischler, America's Cannabis Conversation Doctor on Call. Doctor, how do people get a hold of you?
Thank you for asking. We do lots and lots of telemedicine. Currently, we're doing everything telemedicine, obviously, in light of the virus. So please reach out to us. InhaleMD.com is our website. Again, InhaleMD.com. And through the website, you can read a lot of articles about all of this sort of thing, as well as get to know a little bit about me and reach out either by email or telephone. And we'd be happy to schedule you guys an appointment.
Jordan, thank you for joining us and helping us feel a little better.
My pleasure. Good luck, everyone, and wash your hands a lot.
We'll be right back.
Thank you for taking part in America's Cannabis Conversation. To hear this show in its entirety or to hear any of our archive shows, log on to americascannabisconversation.com and tune in next Saturday at 4:20 p.m. for the next installment of America's Cannabis Conversation.